Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Leo Harmon from Mesereau. How are you doing, my friend?
How are you today?
I am doing well. It is good to see you, and it's obviously coming at a time that, and Lisa was talking about it earlier, about how hard it is to see what's happening in the Middle East, and it just tears your soul out. And a lot of people were going into today very concerned. Obviously, the first concern is human cost. That's
absolutely
the most important thing, without a doubt. People were very worried about how the markets would react to what is happening there. And I think we got a little bit of a surprise that the markets were a little up today. Generally speaking, what is uncertainty in any region in the world? We saw this with Russia, Ukraine. Why does that make markets, or why does that get people really worried about the economic future?
Yeah, I think, first of all, it just brings about incremental volatility. The unknown is something, particularly for equity markets, where you're already at risk of any particular company losing earnings. Having an unknown event, particularly on a geopolitical scale, that becomes unanalyzable creates more volatility in the market overall.
I think, like with Ukraine and Russia, you know, everyday folks looked at that war, and again, it was just like, well, it's still going on. But when it was starting, you know, the human cost concern comes first. But then you start thinking about all the grain that Ukraine makes, mm-hmm. and the trickle down that is. And I guess what I'm driving at is, Leo, in this very global world, this interconnected communities, what happens anywhere affects everywhere.
Absolutely. And then we start to speculate on the causes. We start to speculate whether or not other countries might be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And then that starts to translate into real asset prices and real investment decisions. So you could see that today with the price of oil moving up and a lot of the companies in the energy sector moving higher. You could see it in some of the defense companies, people speculating that if this is a more drawn out conflict, that defense contracts will move up, that defense spending will move higher, and they start to position their portfolios in a manner that is increasing values in those companies.
What's your advice, or what are your thoughts, I should say, broadly speaking? Not to the day traders out there, but to the people like me and many of our listeners who have our 401ks, get nervous about this stuff, but we might have a little bit of a runway here. Is it need to worry, or is it just a need to look deeper into things and just make sure you're in a little position?
Yeah,
okay?
I think it creates an opportunity for you to validate your investment strategy with your advisor. It gives you an opportunity to look at whether or not your allocations are aligned with any changes in the world that might happen, whether you need to add or trim to a particular asset class. And so I think it creates an opportunity for review. The opportunity to do, you know, wholesale trading, I think that's just more difficult for individuals. You know, who knows how long a conflict like this lasts? Who knows what sectors are going to be impacted and for how long? And if you're not on top of the markets every day trading, you can lose sight of that. So, again, I think it's a valid opportunity for you to reassess your asset allocation, but not to make any real significant changes.
Yeah. Not to sell off your 401k today or anything crazy. Right, exactly. All right, Leo, we're just getting started with our conversation. We'll have more with Leo Harmon on a Mesereau Monday, but let's get a look at weather and traffic. It's a Mesereau Monday. Leo Harmon, one of our frequent Mesereau guests. I think this is your fourth time here.
Yeah,
live on the show. You're number one over at Mesereau in terms of that ranking. Not to put Greg Lunsford or anyone else down. You have a whole great team there.
Greg is my good friend, so I'll have to tell him.
Jennifer and everyone else. Y'all are good people. Sumit, we met last week. Sumit, or last month, he's great. Okay. 1-877 Mesereau, by the way. MESIROW.com is where you can go. Let's talk about just in general. Obviously, the market went up today, which puts people in a good mood. The markets went up Friday, which was a nice surprise. But overall, the last month and a half, Nothing to write home about in these markets, is it?
No, and I think, you know, we talked a little bit about just this constant oscillating environment until we get some level of resolution or whether or not we're going to have a recession or a soft landing or no landing at all. And I think the market is still trying to digest that.
You mean that there's, since we talked about recession so much, that that was the expectation, a lot of that was like built in. And now we don't know. And for a while there, it looked like, oh boy, we're not going to land at all. We're going to be fine the whole way. And now we've taken a little step back from that. So that uncertainty just kind of puts you in a range almost, like a back and forth?
It puts you in a range because it's sort of this push-pull. So at first, the push-pull was created by the Fed. The Fed is raising rates. Usually when the Fed raises rates, there's a response 12 to 24 months after monetary policy takes place. That usually has a negative impact on the economy. Sometimes it's a recession. Sometimes it's a slowdown. But it's usually a negative impact on the economy. How big that impact is influences market prices. And for a while, we thought that influence would be pretty high last fall around this time, actually. There was this concept that the Fed might be done. We started to see a lot of companies that were interest sensitive, like housing, start to recover very quickly under the concept that we're going to get a soft landing and that the Fed was done. And then inflation spiked up again, the Fed came back, and a lot of those companies started to roll over. And so we're going through this cycle of up and down based on the fact that there is no resolution. And part of that has been extended by the fact that we had a lot of liquidity added to the economy. We had a lot of monetary liquidity from the Fed. We had a lot of fiscal spending from Congress that created almost $2 trillion of savings for the consumer in excess of trend line. And that savings has really helped to buoy the economy and extend spending. A lot of that has run out, and we're at the point now where we think the rubber has to meet the road.
And college loans back again, too.
College loans back again as well.
So, well, then this is a silly question. When will we know what we got? Because we could do this forever.
That is the hardest part of the equation. I think I said anybody who tells you that they can predict a recession is probably lying to you. You really, a lot of the times, a lot of the data that we look at doesn't start to show recession until well after you've been in a recession. And so we try to look at leading indicators like interest rates and activity like PMI, Purchasing Managers Index, to get an indication of whether or not we're moving into a recessionary environment. But you don't really see it until it's really upon you. And so we're looking particularly at third quarter earnings and fourth quarter earnings and reports from companies who usually will make some sort of forecast about 2024 and trying to get a sense of what their profitability is going to be.
Okay, but like, I get all that, right? That makes sense to me. And, you know, that's why you should never really try to predict things with any certainty because we don't really ultimately know where we're going. I guess what I'm saying is, let's say we stave off this recession. When do we get the all clear? Like when a storm goes by, Tom Skilling, when it's done, says you can come out from the basement. There isn't anything like that for an economy. Is it just one day we look around and go, well, it turns out we're A-okay. Let's just worry about the next one that's coming then.
Well, so you're going to look for a couple of signals. One will be, have interest rates actually peaked? And so today we look at mortgage rates. They're at a 30-year high. We look at the 10-year treasury. It's close to a 25-year high. And those interest rates are moving higher. That usually puts some pressure on the market from a multiple standpoint.
Can I just pause for a second there? Because I think people, and I would count myself as one of them, often attributes to rising interest rates solely to the Fed raising their interest rate, which is part of it. But these are tradable things, and their interest rates, when the 30-year fixed mortgage rate still goes up, when the 10-year goes up, that's not just because the Fed moved up interest rates, right? They're trading at that for some reason.
Yes, so they're trading at that level because they're reflecting either underlying inflation or sometimes they're trading that way for the right reasons. They're reflecting growth. And so when we see rates rising and it's reflecting the fact that we think we're going to have positive growth, we usually don't get too out of whack about that because that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when we see rates rising and we don't know if we're going to have positive growth as a driver of those rates rising, that creates a lot of trepidation in the market overall.
And that's where we are now.
And that's where we are now.
So you see that 10-year go up and you think, oh boy, I can make a lot more money than I could 2 years ago on a 10-year note. Yay for me. Yay for long-term savers. And I guess then that's the flip of the coin, is that if long-term savers are feeling great about fixed rates, that means they're not feeling so good about stocks or equities, right?
Absolutely. Or it means that there is an alternative. So for a long time, there was this concept of Tina.
Oh, Tina, that's Tina. Right.
There is no alternative because interest rates were so low, equity markets were really the only place where you can earn a yield higher than zero or higher than inflation, with interest rates at 5% or 6%, and with corporate bonds even higher and high-yield bonds even higher than that. For some people, that's enough of a benefit where they don't necessarily need to be in the equity markets. They can make an asset allocation to fixed income. And so you have more alternatives to equities. What we're seeing now is money flow out of savings into money market accounts to take advantage of that. We haven't necessarily seen money flow out of equities into fixed income to take advantage of that. But if rates move high enough, that'll put more pressure on
right.
equity markets.
If it goes up to 6%, you're thinking, well, that's a guaranteed 6. Why do that instead of the risk of what the market could be? Leo, can you stick around a little longer
sure.
for us? I want to ask you if the markets themselves, them going down, can cause a recession, or if they're only reactionary, or if they're forward-looking or backwards-looking. I want to dive into that a little bit. Speaking of topping off, you're not supposed to top off your car, right? Isn't that a thing that they say now?
They say now that you're not supposed to do that.
Some car expert, well, let's call Tom Appel one day. I don't know if that's actually true. Some mechanic, 312-981-7200. Text in if that's an old wives' tale or something.
I moved over to the dark side now and purchased my first electric vehicle about 4 months ago.
You like it?
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I got a hybrid, which is nice, but not full electric. Hey, we're not here to talk about our cars. Leo, we've been talking, you know, about how hard it is to predict a recession. And I just wanted to ask, is, you know, we have all these sorts of indicators of the past, right? When the 10-year and the 2-year flip, that indicates X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like some of these indicators that have been long relied on by economists to be a predictor of the future are a little out of whack? Because in March of 2020, we shut down the world and then we reopened it again.
Yeah, I think there's a theory to be made in that case. We shut down the world. We had what was historically one of the world's biggest recessions, at least post-depression.
Mm-hmm.
And the next quarter had the world's biggest recovery.
Right.
And the mechanisms of supply and demand got all out of whack. The synchronization that we usually see from industries that are correlated with each other, those got out of whack. The indicators that we would usually use to predict or at least forecast recovery and recession, while they're still working, are not working in sync. And so we look at indicators like the 2-year, 10-year spread, historically when that's crossed over for any given period of time. It has always been an indicator of a recession down the road with some lag effect. We don't know if those lag effects have just been delayed or whether or not the Fed has actually done its job.
Yeah.
We were talking during this quarter about one of my childhood heroes. I don't know if he's one of yours, Evel Knievel.
Oh, yeah.
and he says, you know, anybody can jump the bike. The trouble starts when you try to land it. And I think that's what this market is sort of going through. The trouble starts as we're trying to land the bike. And all of these historical indicators that are signaling one thing or another are just out of whack. And so you can look at a data point interest rates mm-hmm. and higher interest rates and think we are moving into a recession. And look at a data point like employment, which usually acts with a little bit of a lag, but it's still strong and it's still growing and is nowhere near recessionary levels. Or you look at jobless claims, which is usually a early signal of employment, it's nowhere near recessionary levels. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have consensus on data. You don't have consensus on industries that usually tell you whether you're moving into a recession. And you don't have consensus from companies about their earnings outlook that is usually indicative of a recessionary environment.
Yeah. It is interesting to see how this world moves on and what happens. And of course, the events from this past weekend could play a role in how things move moving forward, just like Russia-Ukraine did, and contribute to even more instability. It's a strange time, to be sure, which is why someone might want to call Mesereau, right?
Absolutely.
Fiduciary. And you guys do a great job of people can kind of call up and pick an advisor that works with them and their needs. And I don't know. I feel like a lot of people have been empowered by this show to take a little bit harder look at their own finances. That can get you to a certain level.
Yep.
But it always helps to have someone that kind of can take a little scope at the wider picture, right?
Particularly if you don't have the expertise yourself or don't have the time yourself.
You don't have to look directly at me when you say those two things. So it's particularly when you don't have the expertise, as he's pointing at me. Yeah, I know. 1-877-MESIRO, MESIROW. Leo, it's always good to talk to you, my friend.
You too, John. Thank you.
And we'll have podcasts of our conversations.
John Williams, I come to your house for dinner.
Sorry, we'll have to re-rack that. We'll have podcasts of our conversation in the next couple of Mondays as well. We drop them on non-live MESIRO Monday.